BAL Files, the ultimate Ravens podcast with Nate Lundy.
It is time for Ravens with BAL Files as we get a chance to talk Ravens with, from Comcast Sportsnet Baltimore, CSN. It is Clifton Brown. You find him on Twitter, at Clifton Brown CSN. Clifton, let's start here. As you look at the Baltimore Ravens from the preseason, what kind of letter grade would you give overall on what you saw?
Well, I'd give them a B, at least, for the preseason. They were undefeated, which, of course, doesn't mean anything. But they got some players back who were injured. Terrell Suggs, Joe Flacco, Rashad Perriman all saw some preseason action and are ready to go week one. They still have two more players who did not, actually three more key players, who did not play in the preseason at all. Dennis Pitta, Elvis Dumervil, both didn't play in the preseason, hoping to get them back. And, of course, Steve Smith Sr., who thinks he's ready to go week one, but didn't play at all during the preseason. So, yeah, I think that they had a good preseason. The number one pick, Ronnie Stanley, at left tackle, played well, and he's going to start at left tackle. So I think for the most part, other than Ben Watson's injury, the tight end who's out for the season, it was a good preseason for them.
Kind of an interesting move here over the last few days, Clifton, with what the Ravens did with Justin Forsett. What do you make of that? What does it say about maybe the pecking order for the running backs overall? Just talk about that backfield and really what was kind of an interesting move there by Baltimore.
Yeah, it was definitely different. To try and sum it up, the Ravens had two players they wanted to put on the injured list who might come back this year, defensive tackle Carl Davis and safety Matt Elam. But you have to have those guys on the 53-man roster on Saturday, the last touchdown day, in order for them to be eligible to come back this season. So there wasn't room to put Forsett and Davis and Elam all on the 53-man roster. So they cut Forsett with a wink on Saturday. And then on Monday, after they put Elam and Davis on the injured list, they signed for a setback, and they also signed Devin Hester. So it was just roster maneuvering. And, yeah, I mean, the pecking order with the running backs, I think Forsett's going to start the opener against the Bills, even though he was cut on Saturday. But there's no question that he's going to be pushed this year by a couple of young running backs. Terrence West, who was a star at Towson and a Baltimore native, and then also their rookie Kenneth Dixon, who has a knee injury, but he'll probably be back in October. Those guys are going to push Forsett this year for carry, so he better get off to a good start.
I know that Dixon's dealing with the injury, but certainly a lot of good looks from him in terms of what they think he's capable of. If you had to bet on it between West and Dixon, who do you think ultimately winds up winning out and being the best of the two?
You know, I think it's very close. I think long term, Dixon is going to be a heck of a player. And he can catch the ball as well as run it, and he can run inside, outside. So I think Dixon is the most talented of the two, but West has a lot of shake, a guy who can make people miss, and he's lost 15 pounds to the end of last season. So I think West's goal is to play so well starting off that when Dixon comes back, they'll be afraid to take him out of the lineup. So we'll see if West can pull that off, but he's had a terrific training camp. He really started as the number four back when camp started and has already worked his way up to number two.
Clifton, you brought up Devin Hester. What do you think he's still got left in the tank to be able to contribute for Baltimore?
Well, first of all, just because of his experience, he'll help the Ravens because they really didn't have anyone they were confident in as a punt returner. And I think Hester's a guy who will make the right decision as far as whether it's a fair catch or not. He won't fumble. He'll make the right decision whether to bring a kickoff out of the end zone or not. And if you give him a hole, he's not going to miss it. Now, does he have the same explosiveness he used to have? I'm sure he does not at age 33. He says he's fully recovered from a toe injury that really lingered with him for over a year. And he finally said that he gave it enough time to get fully healthy, which is why he really didn't try out for anybody until this past weekend with the Ravens. He wanted to be 100%. So I think he'll help the Ravens, and you know he's not going to be like he was 5 or 6 years ago. But again, the Ravens have a really good special teams unit historically, and if they provide Hester with some holes, he'll make some big plays.
When you look at Joe Flacco and you look at the weapons that he's got, Clifton, he's got as much or more speed on the outside than he's ever had. Obviously, Steve Smith Sr., you mentioned as well. He's got a franchise left tackle in Ronnie Stanley. Is this where finally we maybe see the Joe Flacco that Baltimore was hoping to see after they gave him that big contract?
Well, yeah, they like Joe to be more consistent during the regular season. He's been a terrific playoff quarterback. He's already proven that he cannot just be on a Super Bowl team but lead a team to a Super Bowl, and that he's a clutch quarterback. But during the regular season, I think it is fair to say he hasn't been as consistent for a guy who can make any kind of throw that you ask him to. So, yeah, the Ravens have three speed guys they did not have last year. Perriman, Chris Moore, the rookie they drafted from Cincinnati, and Mike Wallace, who they picked up in free agency from the Vikings. So I think that, yeah, these are the most weapons Flacco's ever had. I think Wallace is going to make a definite impact, not just a speed guy, but he and Flacco have established quick chemistry running all types of routes. And Perriman, even though he doesn't have or has no regular season experience, his speed, you have to respect it. So even if he's a decoy in a lot of occasions, he's going to open up stuff underneath for the tight ends, for Steve Smith, for Kamar Aiken. So, yeah, I mean, Flacco has no excuse this year, to me, not to have his best season because the weapons are there.
When you look at Terrell Suggs, you look at Elvis Dumervil, you're talking about guys that are 33 and 32 years old, respectively. They're battling some injuries here and there. If either of those two guys, Clifton, aren't able to take really the majority of the snaps this season, are they in trouble?
They could be. Za'Darius Smith, who had three sacks in the final three games last year, five overall, as a rookie, was starting to come on. He would be the guy then expected to take up some of the slack, along with Matt Judon, another rookie they drafted in the fifth round. He had a sack in each of the first three preseason games. He looks like he'll get some run as a situational snap or pass rusher right away. And, yeah, if Suggs and Dumervil are either hurt or not as productive as they have been, I think you'll see more of Judon as well. But, yeah, they need something from Suggs and Dumervil. And, you know, when they were together in 2014, they had 29 sacks between them. I don't think you can expect that from them, but we'll see. I mean, both of them is a question mark. Suggs coming off Achilles surgery at 33. That's not easy. And Dumervil missed the entire preseason. And he was not at practice in their most recent practice Saturday. So we're not even sure if Dumervil is going to play week one. So that is one of Ravens' big questions. Will Suggs and Dumervil be what we're used to, or will they slack off?
I thought this was kind of a weird stat, Clifton, so I'll share it with you and get your thoughts. When you look at the schedule that the Ravens have this year, it's pretty amazing. They actually wind up traveling a little over 13,000 miles less this season than they did last year. And I know that seems like kind of a weird stat, but you know, when you get to the point of you know, players being up in their 30s and even just trying to keep guys healthy and all the rest of it, is that a big deal, Clifton, that they aren't having to travel as much as they have last year?
I think it is. I mean, well, first of all, I thought last year's schedule for them was ridiculous. I honestly never seen anything like it. They played five of their first seven games on the road, including two trips to the West Coast. I thought they were really kind of overwhelmed by their schedule early, and then along with the injuries, they got buried in a hole they couldn't get out of. This year, schedule's much more friendly. They still have to go out and win the games, but I thought that last year the schedule was going to be a problem, and it was. This year, with a schedule that's more reasonable, I think they have a much better chance to be a contender. Now, the last part of the schedule was tough. The last four games are at New England, home against the Eagles, and then at Pittsburgh on Christmas, and at the Bengals on New Year's Day. So I think the Ravens have to go into those last four games with at least eight wins to have a chance to make the playoffs. So just because, you know, it's easy, it looks easier, they better get off to a good start this year, or else they could be in trouble.
The last time, Clifton, that this team missed the playoffs in back-to-back years was back in 2004-2005. Do they have the ability to keep the streak going this year? Do you see them as a playoff team?
You know, they certainly have the ability. A lot of people have asked me that. I mean, if I had to guess yes or no, I'm just going to say no. I think they'll barely miss the playoffs. Just because they have so many question marks, I don't know if I can give a thumbs up to all the answers. But I definitely think they'll be in the playoff hunt come December. You know, if I had to guess, I'd say they'll finish 9-7. I just have problems seeing them being better than the Steelers and the Bengals. I think they may finish third in the division. If they do, it's tough to make the playoffs. So we'll see. I mean, they're either a team that just makes the playoffs or just misses. I don't see them any way they win fewer than 7 games if Flacco stays healthy. But I can't see them winning more than 11 either. So they're right in that area where they'll either just make or just miss.
It's the BAL Files and talking Ravens this week with Clifton Brown from CSN Baltimore, Comcast Sportsnet. You find him on Twitter at Clifton Brown CSN. Clifton, really appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Stick around. The coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the good throws down the field, for them to play good defense, I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am an IA, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise, I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team. And Don McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford, I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%. A little better than one-to-one touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line, Ezekiel Elliott, could be a huge plus for them, but that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year, with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Michael Larkin. It goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to be. Yet, remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over. As the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team, but that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. The preseason was just not going to be important. So, I mean, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you've got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like Mike Mularkey. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk. Okay, but he's not bad. David Johnson's pretty good. They want to run the ball well, and if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. They're going to play great defense. You know, typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball better? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo if, as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bill team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do. More so than any team in the league, they morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second win during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second win kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've played the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL. versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience, one team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And then also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there's was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five, Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.